Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network for 10 years. Learn more about Roberta's at robertaspizza.com.
This week on a special Valentine's Day edition of Meat and Three, we put a twist on the lovey-dovey holiday.
The mission statement is save the world through silliness and chocolate, and in parentheses, launch a chocolate bar into outer space. But I'm having some conflict on the board members with the parentheses. That's okay.
He cited that in his area there used to be 30 dairy farms and now there are 3.
You know, dessert was political, and what you had on the dessert table said more about you than other markers of success.
Tune in to Meat and Three, HRN's weekly food news and storytelling roundup wherever you listen to podcasts. Welcome to HRN Happy Hour. It's 5 o'clock somewhere, and somewhere is Bushwick. I'm your host, Kat Johnson, here with my amazing, as always, co-hosts, Hannah Ford and Dylan Hoyer.
Happy Thursday.
Happy 5 o'clock.
Dylan walked in, and I was like, do you want wine? She's like, yes.
And the thing is, we asked her the same question yesterday, and you were like, I don't know, I have like 60 emails, so I like this.
Yeah, so then I went through all those emails, and now I'm like, oh my god, I need wine.
A glass of wine. I'll take a bottle. I feel you. Jess Kreinchich, our engineer in the booth.
Hi.
Hello, hello.
Can I just say what a beautiful Roberta's ad read that was?
Oh, thank
you. You're our resident NPR voice, and we love you.
So soothing. Our guest today, who we've been hanging out with for a little while in the studio, is Ben Simon, the co-founder of Ben to Table. Welcome.
Thank you. Great to be here.
And this is a doubleheader HRN show day for you. You just did Why Food earlier.
I did. Had some fun in this very room with Valerie and Ethan.
You've been hanging out a while.
In this very shipping container.
Yeah. Can you believe it?
How is the show with the two of them today? What did you guys talk about?
Fantastic. We opened with some debate chatter, got into campaigning and food and sustainability and all sorts of fun stuff.
That is
you
a little bit of foreshadowing.
In. All the good stuff.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about some of those things as well. Should we talk about the debate? I don't know. I will just say it was the most fun one yet. I had a great time watching it.
Were you drinking?
Absolutely.
And Dylan, we had just drank a liter of wine, if you remember.
Remember that? I do, yes. And then I went home and I continued that. I drank some sherry that I had gotten from Henry's because I, this weekend, made some shrimp and grits and with mushrooms, so I had sherry. And then I was like, let me finish that. And then I made some Rancho Gordo beans and some roasted carrots and a steak. And then I opened
up. Were you feeding, how many dozen people were you feeding?
The whole debate stage.
Yes. I was cooking for the Democratic primary. And then I opened, when Will got home, we opened up a bottle of Cremant de Jura. Because I was like, you know, it's a special occasion.
I made a single serving of cacio e pepe and ate it in bed.
Also fantastic.
With my cat.
We went to an amazing, there's this one Thai restaurant in New Haven that is like vastly better Thai food than New Haven deserves. It's called September in Bangkok, for anyone listening. And we went there after I picked my daughter up from daycare.
And then did you watch the debate?
No.
No.
I watched Narcos, Mexico.
Oh,
I mean, perhaps the only thing more stressful than the debate.
It's a great season.
Yeah. Was it as tense as Klobuchar and Buttigieg? That's the question.
No.
Probably not. Yeah.
I watched some clips.
It was tense. Definitely not. It was super tense. Okay. So we're going to get a little bit more. We're going to get into why we're talking about politics with Ben. There's more to that story. And then we're going to talk about Ben to Table. But first, we have a few announcements. Like we mentioned last week, or Dylan mentioned last week, there's an exciting event coming up with Food Karma.
Oh my gosh. It's going to be so exciting.
You seem so excited.
Pork pozole, seafood pozole, red and green pozole, 100 bottles of mezcal at this event. You don't want to miss out.
You don't.
The New Yorker magazine is talking about it. Time Out is talking about it. Grub Street, 10 best, number one best thing to do in February. Last day of February. Don't miss it. Bowlofzole.com.
It's the best thing to do with your leap day.
Is Ronan Farrow going to be there?
Maybe.
Yeah, there's going to be Ronan Farrow pozole.
He hasn't said he won't be there.
Exactly.
Watch it. Excellent. That's super exciting.
Okay, guess what we're doing soon?
Very soon. We're heading down south.
We're going to Charleston Wine and Food, which is just such a fun time. We have been building like a killer lineup of interviews for all 3 days of the festival. HRN is going to be broadcasting live from the Culinary Village. So we're going to have all of the coolest chefs and bartenders and winemakers and all around just lovely human beings stopping by to chat with us. And we cannot wait. If you're going to be in Charleston, please come see us. We're also doing some fun parties that Kat teased. So if you want an invite, just slip into our DMs and we'll be sure to send you the details.
@heritage_radio.
Yep, that's where you find us. And if you can't make it to Charleston, we will be live streaming all of our coverage from 12 to 5 every day, which is March 5th. Which one is it? 6th, 7th, and 8th.
Yep,
March 6th, 7th, that's and 8th, it. Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Just a tease, you'll hear from our friend Stephen Satterfield. You'll hear from
The Lee Brothers. Hannah Raskin.
Oh my gosh.
Hannah Raskin, the only person who I know of who did a restaurant review without going to the restaurant because they wouldn't let her in. So she sent people into the restaurant for herself.
Yeah, and we'll just have a really long conversation about the best way to spell Hannah. Because we disagree.
Speaking of debates.
But it's going to be amazing, so please listen in or come visit us.
Yeah. A few more events, just to quickly tease. On February 27th, In the Sauce with Allie Kane is going to be doing a live episode at Whole Foods Tribeca. As you may know, Allie Kane of Haven's Kitchen also has a sauce line, and her show focuses a lot about businesses similar to hers, CPG, products that you might find in your grocery store. And she's going to be doing a Women's Day panel with like-minded business owners and entrepreneurs. And that will then air later on in the sauce. We also have a three-part live podcast event coming up on March 1st at the Philly Chef Conference. So if you're in Philadelphia, there are tickets available through Resy. And we're going to be recording A Hungry Society, opening soon, and All in the Industry. So you can come to that event live. If not, if you can't make it, we will have all three of those episodes up soon. And lastly, Feast Meets West is also doing a live podcast event on March 12th here in New York City, and tickets for that are available on Eventbrite. There's going to be a live podcast. There will also be a social event following it. People get goodie bags, there will be bites, there will be drinks. So all the live podcast events you could ever want.
Oh, hi, did we mention Taste Washington?
Also, Taste Washington's coming up in March.
Yeah.
So there's Sam Ben Ruby on the road, twice in 1 month.
Twice in 1 month. You were like, I need more Sam Ben Ruby in my life. Guess what? It's coming. We're going to have so much Grape Nation content coming your way in March. So uncork all your favorite bottles of wine and sit down and listen to Sam wax poetic with all his favorite winemakers. It's going to be so fun.
Ben was talking about all the wine he has in his basement, so we can just go drink all his wine and listen to the Grape Nation.
Perfect.
Welcome.
Okay, so should we do some headlines?
Let's do it.
Okay, on Opening Soon this week, Jenny and Alex spoke with Tracy Malachek Ezekiel and Arjav Ezekiel of Birdies in Austin, a forthcoming neighborhood cafe on the east side of the city, about the process of getting a new restaurant lease. They spoke with them a couple months ago when they were in the middle of negotiations, and this week they're catching up to see how it all went. So if you haven't been listening to this season of Opening Soon, it's a nail biter. It's going week by week as people try to open a restaurant, so you don't want to miss it. Tune in.
On Japan Eats this week, Akiko Katayama hosts the director and composer behind the new film Nourishing Japan. This film explores Japanese food education philosophy through an example of the unique school lunch programs at an elementary school in the Tohoku region.
And right after the show today, Processing is releasing its newest episode featuring our dear friend and HRN host emeritus, Reverend DJ Cherish the Love, a.k.a. Cynthia Cherish Mallorin. Cynthia is a world-renowned DJ, reverend, and breast cancer survivor. She is going to talk with Bobby and Zara about her journey with cancer from diagnosis through treatment, which included her DJing to fellow chemo recipients during infusions and her enlightening concept of primary foods. Cynthia also has a podcast on HRN called Primary Foods, which is records periodically, but if you want to listen to it, it's amazing. And if you ever need a DJ or wedding officiant, look up DJ Cherish the Love. She's the absolute best.
Also, she has a show on our network called Wedding Cake.
Yes.
She's the only person that I'm aware of that has held a vow renewal ceremony live on air in this room. Wow. That's why there's such good vibes here.
That's a great fun fact.
Yeah. She's the best. And she works with Netflix a lot. So you might see her name on Netflix credits. And she flies her dog across the country with her. She's maybe one of the coolest people I know.
Yeah, she's definitely like on the top 10 list of coolest people we know. Yeah. She also DJs our gala. So if you want to be in the room with that level of coolness, you should keep an eye out for when we start selling tickets.
Don't miss it. All right. It's the time of the show where we do our interview with our guest of honor. Okay, Ben. So we've mentioned Ben to Table, but for those uninitiated, what is Ben to Table? What's the story?
So Ben to Table is essentially, you know, Stitch Fix for your pantry, right? So rather than trying to upgrade your wardrobe, it's a subscription box service that each month brings you a fun assortment of delicious and well-made ingredients to cook with, from pantry essentials like heirloom grits. You mentioned Rancho Gordo beans, Kat, already.
Love them.
Whole grain pastas, things like that. To a, you also have a delicacy subscription that features food from a different culinary tradition each month. So Spain, Italy, India, Mexico, Thailand, France, on and on and on.
Amazing. Yeah, we've talked a lot about subscription services that are like meal kits, which I feel like there's a gap in the market for folks who maybe are a little too advanced for a meal kit, aren't looking for that level of support. But like, I know I can always use a pantry upgrade. My pantry is terrifying. There's so much tinned fish, some of it good, some of it bad. But it's such a good like halfway point between people who need...
like a recipe card
to
follow.
Like something really special. And here's a suggestion of what to do with it. But also, like, if you just crack it open, it's going to be fantastic no matter what.
Absolutely. Worth really thinking about people who don't need a meal kit but are interested in having tasty stuff come to them each week that they can, or each month, that they can experiment with, that they can create new things with. We do include some cards in the box that are... got some in front of us here that are more like sort of ideas of what to do with stuff rather than, you know, here is exactly what this is for, right? There's no shrink wrapped carrot or single stalk of, single scallion bulb. It's here's a bunch of things. Here's some ideas of what to do with them. Go nuts from there.
Nice.
With sort of as much guidance as you might need on the website, but a lot of room for kind of anywhere in the that spectrum of super inventive, just go wherever you want to, there's this recipe. Here's an idea of exactly what to do with this thing, which I can totally follow.
And we met you at Good Food Mercantile.
Yes.
And a lot of the amazing makers that we are friends with from Good Food Mercantile are featured in Bend to Table boxes. Can you talk about how you source all these amazing ingredients?
Sure. So I began with some ideas of very specific ingredients. Often in many of my boxes start each month, I have a few ideas of for instance, in the Mexico box that we did last month, I knew I wanted a mole. I knew I really wanted to find a huitlacoche that is shelf-stable and also good.
Can you say what that
is? So huitlacoche is, it's essentially like corn mushrooms. So if you think about, you know, imagine a stalk of corn, an ear of corn, and it kind of sounds less appetizing than it is, kind of fungus growing on the corn, a farmer who doesn't know what that is would think, ah, my corn is ruined. A farmer who knows what it is thinks, aha, I've struck gold. And it's essentially, you can harvest those mushrooms, and they cook pretty similarly to mushrooms. It's very common to find them on, for instance, a huarache, which is like a thin, griddled corn cake filled with beans that you'll find often in Mexico City. With, you know, you'll put sauces and then maybe some huitlacoche and some cotija cheese or something like that on top of it. And it's very hard to find good shelf-stable versions of that, right? If you can find it fresh in markets in Mexico, which is fantastic. Every now and again, maybe you can find it fresh if you have a particular supplier or, like, you know, a corn farmer in the U.S. There are some canned versions that are not very good. I managed to find one producer in Mexico that does a jarred version that's actually pretty tasty. And interestingly, they also do a vac-packed version. And I found that to have this kind of astringent, it wasn't nearly as good, right? Mm-hmm. So there's sort of, I have an idea for a product, I try to figure out how I can get it, and then I'll try and sample different versions of it to see if there's a sort of better or worse mm-hmm. version. Also, there's sort of suppliers I know and really like. Mm-hmm. And then I might look at their catalogs and see, oh, you have this thing I know I want. Let me sample a few of these other things and figure out what works from both a sort of cohesion of the box perspective of, like, if you're looking at this set of ingredients, does this make sense? Does this hang together? But also from an economic standpoint for me and for the cost structure of everything. And then also for, is it sort of right, and which is to say, does it taste good? Is the producer a producer I'm interested in featuring? All these sorts of considerations beyond just the kind of, does it taste right?
Yeah.
So a lot of kind of what you're offering to people is you're doing the legwork, you're curating the boxes, you're doing all the work to find these amazing products, and then as a consumer, you just get to open it up and be surprised and delighted by what you find in there. And then it helps you decide, like, how you're going to feed yourself, how you're going to nourish yourself. So why was that something that interested you? Why did you want to get into that sort of customer relationship in the first place?
So a big part of why I'm doing this that I didn't really talk about in the last thing is the a kind of lens I have on what types of products I'm sourcing, which is trying to promote producers that are really living values of sustainable agriculture, of more ecological ways of producing food, which I have spent several years working at Greenpeace on sustainable agriculture, principally was also working on some climate campaigns and some other work as well. But did a bunch of work around the world on thinking about how do we actually shift our agriculture system globally, right? And a big part of that equation has to be what we often call solutions, right? Which is, it's not just about stopping the bad thing. It's also about helping the good thing flourish in its place, mm-hmm. right? You can destabilize a system. You can create weakness in a system. But unless there's something new and better that can actually rise up and take its place, nothing really changes. And so as I've thought more about what could I do, how could I be a part of this shift that's needed, figuring out how to make something that's on that solution side really started to appeal to me. And so a big part of what I'm trying to do with this is help people find these products that are delicious and also that help to move our essentially global agriculture system forward in a good way. And so in an ideal world, to me, this is something that actually significantly shifts the demand for heirloom beans and grits and grains that are produced well, that are part of a sort of biodiverse growing process, and explaining what I mean by that, biodiverse as opposed to sort of monocultural or polycultural as opposed to monocultural refers to the idea of growing more than one crop at a time, right? And the benefits of that can be many, right? But some principal ones are natural pest resistance and resilience. So actually making it, you know, if you're growing 10 crops and one fails, that's fine. If you're growing one crop and it fails, you're completely screwed, right? And so there's actually benefits to the grower as well, but it's a really significant shift for the way many farmers think about this stuff and have seen how farming works. And so it's working in pockets, but how do we get it to become, how can we make it dominant? How can we make the way Steve Sando at Rancho Gordo grows the way most beans are grown, not just the way some niche beans are grown?
Mm-hmm. So in particular, Rancho Gordo is one that has been getting like a lot of hype recently. People are like really on this whole fancy bean kick. He's inevitably like the one on top of people's list. Now people are like fighting to get on his bean club. I just think it's like wild. It's exciting. But, you know, I do wonder, do you think that we'll see that with like other types of pantry staples? Kind of, you have, I think, your finger on the pulse of a lot of this. What do you kind of see as like the next wave, if any?
I hope yes. I hope that the same way we're seeing it with beans, we see it with grits or farro or rye berries or, you know, all these grains that are barley are kind of scary or weird, right? I think that a lot of people, when you present them with a grain, their first thought is, oh my God, what's the water to grain ratio that I need in order to not screw this up, right? And a big sort of a revelatory moment. So my sister-in-law is a chef in Toronto, and she stayed with us for a couple of months after my daughter was born. She was able to kind of engineer this a little break between jobs. And one of the things she taught me in this when she was staying with us was this totally different way of conceiving of cooking of grains, right? Which is put in more water than you need and just cook it and let it cook and like test it every now and again after you think it might be done. And at some point it'll be done, and then drain it and you're good to go, right? And you can get fancier with it from there, but basically every single grain can be cooked that way. And I think, so a lot of the work I think is in the same way that Steve Sando has done a ton of work demystifying the dried bean, mm-hmm. right? You don't actually need to pre-soak it. You don't actually need to worry too much about it. I think we can do the same thing with grains and move beyond like what, I mean, what white rice can be great. I'll probably have some Carolina rice in a box coming soon, but there's also a huge diversity beyond that that we can work with. And those types of crops are enormously helpful for, like, if you can sow in some rye and have that in your rotation, you need less fertilizer, for instance, right? Even if you're not fully organic.
Nice.
No, I think it was in Civil Eats in their newsletter earlier this week. There was a talking about how like people moving towards a plant-based diet and seeking out plant-based proteins, that like the artisan, I think they mentioned specifically like lentils and peas market was exploding, and like that's good for farmers, that's good for people who have CPG companies, good for people like Ben who are selling specialty goods. Like, I'm here for it.
Yeah, because when you do cut out meat, you have to be in search of flavor in different ways.
And protein.
And then I think that you realize how much flavor exists, especially if we're preserving the biodiversity among yes. plants.
And also I feel like we have made, in some circles, we've made the jump to kind of less and better on the meat side, right? Right? So
even meat companies are espousing this, absolutely, like Heritage right? Foods.
So the idea of like, don't eat meat with every meal. When you eat meat, it should be meat that's worthwhile, that's worth actually like paying them more money to have it meat that was treated well, that died well, that tastes better, right?
And isn't destroying the environment.
Exactly. Yeah. And so the same transition, the same mindset shift, and also with produce at the farmer's market, right? Yeah. The idea of $4 a pound for tomatoes in the summer when they're fresh, as opposed to $1 a pound at Kroger's.
It's a no-brainer when you have the good tomato.
It's like, yeah, it's like I would rather eat fewer tomatoes and have them be better, yeah. right? At some point, that analogy breaks down because, like, you got to feed your family. But the idea of spending $6, $7, $8 for a pound of dried beans is, I think, to some folks, bonkers.
Yeah.
Right? But there's actually no reason it should be. If it's worth it, right? Yeah. And if it's actually tastier and there's benefits to drink, to having purchased it beyond your own specific direct enjoyment of it.
Yeah, I think we talk about this a lot, that like a lot of what is wrong with our food system is because we're habituated that like food is cheap.
Yes, and like the commodity.
And it doesn't make sense.
Yeah, and the sort of the degree to which our whole culture until pretty recently has fed us into the idea that a tomato is a tomato is a tomato, grits is grits is grits, rice is rice is rice, steak is steak is steak. Is a huge part of how screwed up our agriculture system is.
Yes.
And with that, I feel like we should eat some squid or something.
Yeah, let's take a quick commercial break. We're going to pop open some of the conservas that Ben brought with him, and then we'll come back, we'll have a little bit, and we'll talk about them in a little bit more detail. Stick around.
Cool.
My name is Brandon Hoy, co-owner of Roberta's, a super duper awesome place. Roberta's is a very, 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 very proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. We're also super awesome. Thank you, Heritage.
No, thank you, Roberta's. As always, thanks to Brandon Hoy for that amazing ad. It's incredible
lunch
that he,
today.
It's incredible that he does that live for us every week.
Yeah, he's always willing to pop right in. We'll be like, Brandon, we need you to do the Roberta's ad. He's like, okay, I'll drop everything. I'll leave my kids. We just had a really satisfying lunch at Roberta's today, too. Like, yeah. We have a lot of lunch meetings and dinner meetings at Roberta's, and like, you'd think we would get sick of it, but it's always good. Like, it's always good.
Couldn't recommend it enough. They have a great citrus salad on right now that is perfect for the winter. Cannot recommend it enough.
It was that citrus salad was like an antidepressant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The color, the flavor. Yeah. All right. So Ben, you have a lovely little tin in your hand.
Yeah. So following up all this discussion about sustainable agriculture, one of the things that I also sort of love and was really in my mind when launching Bento Table is Spanish conservas. So when I think most Americans think of tinned seafood, first of all, they think of canned seafood. They think of the kind of sad tuna fish in the back of their cabinet or something like that, right? And one of the things that I've come to love on my own travels, also I think I'm not sure if it was Parts Unknown or if it was a previous show, There's a Bourdain episode from, I think, 2007 or 8, where he goes to the Espinaler bar and has some just mussels from a can that the way he described them is like,
I think that
was
No Reservations.
It's like, oh my, I must have this,
yeah.
Right? And also they are in a slightly different way than heirloom grits, a version of thinking about sustainability differently, right? They are... generally, they tend to be fish, seafood caught right where they are at a pretty small scale by fishers who are thinking about overall stocks. They're being prepared on premises and then shipped in a way that is pretty minimally has a minimal ecological footprint, right? Mm-hmm. They're preserved and then they can be, they're tinned and then they can be shipped on a boat instead of having to be airlifted, right? Yeah. Fish flown from Tokyo to here to have the best sushi fish is super not great, but
it happens.
Yeah. But here we are, right? And so so what I have here today to sample is two different, we have a mussels in an escabeche, which is a kind of citric marinade from Conservas de Cambados, which is one of the producers I'm working with in stocking. And the other is an octopus and olive oil from Espinaler, actually the sort of bar in Barcelona that Bourdain went to. And they're basically, there's a friend was describing to me, is from there, how there's basically 100 different tavernas like Espinaler that have been around forever. And Espinaler in the 70s or so basically decided hey, let's brand what we're doing and let's start doing fish. And they just kind of took off and have been great. To enjoy it with, we have this Espinaler sauce, which is on the bar in Barcelona. And it's this wonderful combination of Tabasco and mignonette in one thing.
Yes, please.
Is it actually Tabasco?
No,
it's a
vinegary hot sauce.
So I say that'd be kind of wild.
No.
Am I going to feel like I'm in Spain when we eat this?
Hopefully.
Yes.
Well, especially with this lovely orange wine here.
Oh.
So,
excellent sound.
Oh my god,
effect.
It's the vacation I knew I needed and didn't take.
All right.
So we just opened the mussels.
Someone say something.
So here's what
I'm told. I'm told that they don't like mouth noises on mic.
Yeah, but our listeners do.
Okay.
Our listeners love mouth noises. They love
they? Kat's eyes are bulging out of her face right now.
So here's what I want to do. I want to do a tinned fish tour of the Iberian Peninsula. Can we organize that? Can we go?
Well, so, not to be self-promotional, but I would simply recommend an assortment of Conservas bundles from Bend to Table, which is way cheaper than the flight and
Thank
then buying
so much for that solution.
Buying the same price there. So we have, I have mostly Spanish seafood on the site, but also a little bit of French. So there's some amazing anchovies from Brittany that are preserved with French, really good French butter and sea salt. And then there's an Italian bronzino in oil, which is also just lovely. It's this big, sort of nice filet and quite unctuous and delicious.
Those mussels are fantastic. Dylan's
you can't
speechless.
Help but just nod your head, while you're eating them.
Dang.
You're just yes.
Mmm. Yum. Okay, next.
Next.
That one wasn't as loud as the other one.
No, sorry. trying not to spill oil everywhere.
So this is the octopus?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, Hannah's got bread going.
Smart. I just went right in for it. All right.
The
Dylan,
bread
you
is
go
my
first?
Napkin.
No, I'm not ready to go first.
Okay.
You go first. Please,
Kat. Actually,
we're going to do a little bit of sauce action on it. Yum. So do you guys both eat octopus?
Mm-hmm.
I do on occasion.
Yeah.
On this occasion.
Enthusiastically.
My other half does not eat octopus
because
he thinks they're too smart.
Does he eat pig?
He does eat pig.
So, well, then I call his bluff.
I think he watched one of those videos about the octopus crawling out of some an aquarium and he was like, no. And I'm I don't know. They're still good.
So, I love the octopus because it's basically just It's like tender braised octopus.
Mm.
And all of these are just, you just pop the can and you're good to go. It's the best dinner party hors d'oeuvre you could possibly imagine as long as your guests eat fish.
Right. So how are these cooked? They're cooked and then tinned?
Mm-hmm. So different, for the most part, yes. There are some producers, the cooking happens in the tin. But
okay.
For the most part, they're sort of gently poached, and then hand-packed, and then sauce layered on, and then the tin is sealed.
Delicious. Also great with this wine. We didn't mention really what wine is. We were drinking, but we were drinking an orange wine from Roberta's. It's excellent.
Another plug for Roberta's wine list, which is exceptional.
K4D08. It's a confusing.
I think it's Calcareous.
Calcareous. Yeah.
There it is.
Orange Puglia Calcareous. Yummy.
Yum.
It's so good that we had it 2 days in a row.
No shame. No shame in our game.
So Ben, how does your newfound fun job of getting to taste all these delicious things on our behalf, because you used to work in politics, like, is this like a well-needed
departure?
Breath.
Well, I've thought for a long time in the work that I've been doing. So I was more in kind of electoral politics, as we think of it, from, let's say, 06 to 2011 or so. And the last major thing I did was helped to launch President Obama's reelection campaign from the team I led at the DNC, and then, you know, came back to help a bit at the end of the Obama-Romney campaign. Those were such bygone days when
the good old days.
The old plutocrat was.
Do you mean Pierre?
We thought we were scared then.
Yeah.
Do you mean Pierre Delecto?
I do mean Pierre. I just listened to a reply all about Pierre Same. Delecto.
Our mornings went similarly.
Same moi. Yeah.
And yeah, and the sort of I've been since 2013 in this kind of environmental human rights. So I've been doing a lot of work, obviously, with Greenpeace for several years, but then more recently have had been working at a senior level with our own kind of nonprofit startup, working with groups like Amnesty International and UNICEF and World Animal Protection, and also continuing a bit with Greenpeace. And I've often, sort of every time I've thought about what would I want to do next, I always have come back in some way to food and in some way to this sort of solutions idea. And when we moved a couple years ago from San Francisco, where we had been for about 7 years, to New Haven, Connecticut. And New Haven is a lovely place. Come to love it. And also it is the case that a lot of the sort of proximity to amazing food I had in San Francisco is no longer as available, right? So I'm that guy who's like, yes, I am going to order 10 pounds of beans so that I get the free shipping. Mm-hmm. But that places me in a fairly weird niche. But as I talk to more and more people, I realize there's actually a lot of folks who are interested in that kind of thing, but either don't have the time to spend thinking about it and hunting it out, don't have the access to it, you don't have access to stores, or just are sort of not inclined to care too much but would love to have it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, yeah, it'd be great if I could cook amazing, interesting grits instead of boring Quaker Oats grits. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I'm not gonna go out of my way to make that happen, but yeah, if it came every month, that'd be great. Right. And so this sort of crystallized as a way to sort of that to have an impact on that solution side and meet a need that I think exists and that I'd like to. And it's also, I think, an unseen need. Right. It's not a I listen to Cooking Issues a lot. Right. And Dave and Nastasia talk about how they're a trailing edge technology. Often, right, that like this isn't a must-have. Like, no one's going to go hungry absent this, but I think it can be a really interesting part of the equation for how you cook if you care about what you cook, mm-hmm. and for how you feed your family if you particularly care about how you feed your family, and especially if you can think about it the same way that you'd think about, you know, what you spend at the farmer's market, what you spend at the actual good butcher that's a bit of a hike or whatever. I think it fits really well in that whole sort of framework and mindset.
Yeah, and it's interesting, like, our mission is to make the world more equitable, sustainable, and delicious. And I think the delicious part can sometimes you know, you're like, yes, of course, food should be delicious, but also, like, look at the environment and look at, like, labor rights, but also, like, I think what Bend Table is really summing up is, like, it's worth it to, like, really do the work and spend the money if you can, because deliciousness is important to a life well lived.
True. On that note, do you have anything else you want to touch on? One thing you should definitely touch on is how people can learn more about it. Yeah.
So we have a website on the internet. It is at bentotable.com, bentotable.com. We are also on various of your favorite or not so favorite social media platforms, most notably Instagram and Facebook, at bentotable, where the instead of T-O, it's the number two. We're also have a Twitter handle, but honestly don't use it and can't quite handle the fire hose of Twitter personally, but we are there and may start posting more at some point. We also are, as part of a sort of partnership we're starting with HRN, doing a, I guess we can call it a promotion, where if you subscribe to either our essential subscription or the delicacy subscription or the Bend to Table box subscription, which is both, it's sort of our flagship every month, like the best stuff every month, and you use the code HRN at checkout, so HRN, like Heritage Radio Network, you will get $20 off your first month subscription, and we will donate $10 to HRN.
Woo!
And the one other thing I'm realizing that I have not said is that we also have, there's not very much in the way of meat or animal products in the subscriptions generally. There's a tin of razor clams in the first delicacies box from Spain. But there hasn't been anything else since. However, if you want to guarantee yourself vegetarian ingredients every month, there is a vegetarian delicacy, is a vegetarian Bend to Table box, and essentials is always vegetarian.
Awesome.
Not necessarily plant-based, because there might wind up being like a pasta with a little bit of egg or something like that. Mm-hmm. So I don't want to guarantee that, but it's pretty plant-based forward.
Nice. That's way we should all be eating more often.
Exactly.
All right. So it's that time of the show where we have some trivia. And Ben, you're not alone on this. No one else has seen the questions and answers, so you have a
team. We're here for you.
Okay.
And our theme this week, Jess once again helped us write this trivia. And we thought it'd be fun to do some bean trivia because of all the bean hype these days. And in honor of the beans you can get in your Bend to Table subscription. All right. Question number one. What country produces the most beans?
Interesting. Do soybeans count as beans?
Jess? Judges?
Oh, God, I have no idea.
I'm going to say yes.
Probably. Well, if it's soybeans, then it's probably
U.S. US. I would think the U.S., yeah.
No.
No?
It's India.
Oh.
Sure. All right, yeah.
Okay.
Followed by Myanmar and Brazil.
In this category, are lentils counting as beans?
Oh, I don't know.
They must.
They must.
All right, question number two. In ancient Greece, a load of black beans with one singular white bean were put in a bean machine. Whoever picked the white bean would receive what? Ooh. A, a cow. B, a bride. C, a cash prize. D, a low-ranking government position.
Wait, start from the beginning. What?
In ancient Greece, a load of black beans with one singular white bean were put in a bean machine.
I'm imagining like a bingo, all the bingo things, kind of and there's one white bean.
Yeah.
See, there's been a lot of opportunities that I feel like I need to be able to phone a friend. And a friend, I mean my nerd ass.
So we
husband.
Can like we can Trivial Pursuit this out, right? So sort of the four options are what? Cow, bride, cash.
Government position.
Yeah.
So
I feel like with Greece, they loved giving away government
positions. Yeah, I think it's either money or government position.
Yeah, I think it's government position.
Because they weren't into like forced marriage.
Yeah.
And they didn't eat that much beef.
No.
You guys are on it.
Cash or government? Sure. Yeah, nice.
Yes. Government position. A clerotarion was a randomization device used by the Athenian polis during the period of democracy to select citizens to most state offices. What a time. to be alive.
It's like the Electoral College.
Side note, Athens is awesome. It has a bad rap. Everyone just likes to go to Greece to go to the islands and stuff. I worked with a bunch of people in Greece and was there all the time, and it's amazing.
Recommendation
for
Athens.
My favorite grocery store in Kolonaki.
Cool. Ooh. All right. National Bean Day is January 6th, the day that this geneticist, famous for his pea and bean plant experiments, died.
It's going to be like the Green Revolution guy.
No, come on. This is classic high school biology.
Think about the squares. The gene squares.
What?
This is bad. My next door neighbor is like an epidemiologist.
Gene squares?
Can we get a multiple choice?
Like the XY.
Okay, I'll give you a multiple choice for his first name. John, Paul, George, or Ringo?
Ringo. No, I'm kidding.
Paul. I'm going to go with Paul.
Nope.
John.
Nope.
Oh. George.
Ringo.
George who?
George.
Rhymes with spindle.
Trindle.
Wendell.
Mendel.
There you go.
Oh.
George Mendel.
No. Oh, Gregor. Mendel. Gregor.
Oh, Gregor Mendel.
Gregor Mendel.
Oh, yeah.
I read it wrong.
I know that guy. He did love beans.
Verified.
That name does ring a bell somewhere. Definitely would never have come up with that.
No.
Name.
Well, someone was not paying attention to biology, and that someone is me.
Is all of us.
Never heard that name in my entire life.
All right, question number four. Which bean did Pythagoras refuse to eat because he believed they contained the souls of the dead?
Lentils.
Wait, you have to give the hint.
Hint. They go well with a nice Chianti.
Oh, fava.
Fava.
Yes.
Beans. Makes sense.
Good hint, Jess. I love that. You. All right. Question number...
Have you guys had like proper like fava puree?
No.
It's sort of... So in Greece, they do like... Instead of hummus with chickpeas, they do like... You order like fava, and it's basically the same idea.
Oh.
So it's like cooked fava pureed with oil and probably a little garlic, parsley garnish with like a spritz of lemon with some nice crusty bread.
I'm into that.
Yeah, you can do it with beans. I do with white beans.
I've had black-eyed pea hummus. It's pretty good, too.
Yeah.
Have you had chocolate hummus, though?
No.
Because my boyfriend's mother loves to buy it.
The same
I'm
brand.
Sorry. Okay.
I can't say I love to eat it, but
is it a chickpea base?
It is.
And there's chocolate in it.
Yes.
I don't like that.
You understand it now.
Question number...
take this off air.
Question number five. Every hour, how many tons of baked beans are eaten in Britain?
Oh, my.
Price is Right rules.
So many.
How many tons?
What's the time increment?
Every hour, how many tons of baked beans are eaten? Everyone just go around and say a number.
A number of tons.
So a ton is 1,000 pounds.
I think it's 2,000. 2,000.
That's 2,000 pounds?
One?
Good strategy. I like it.
I'm going to say 5.
Okay.
I'll say 6.
Ben gets it. It's 38.5 tons.
Oh my God.
Too many beans.
How is that possible?
All right,
I don't know if you've ever had a full English breakfast, but you get a ton of beans.
Yeah, literally a ton.
In a single serving.
It's 38 and a half people eating English breakfast.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Each hour.
Yeah. All right, last question. According to that wonderful childhood ditty, beans are the musical fruit that make you toot. Why can eating beans cause you to be gassy? What is it? What is it about beans? Oh,
starchiness?
They ferment in your gut.
Hey.
Jess is going to give it to you.
Nice.
They contain a sugar called oligosaccharides.
That ferments in your gut.
Your body cannot fully digest. Foods that come into the large intestine without being absorbed in the small intestine will cause gas.
Okay.
However, I'll also say there are things you can do to minimize the tootiness of beans. The most importantly is like eat beans.
Yeah.
Actually.
That's what Steve says.
Yeah. Also cooking... beans with kelp,
that's also what Steve says.
Yeah, it breaks down that enzyme and makes it more digestible. As a person who has a super, super messed up digestive system, that's what I do.
Everyone should be on the Rancho Gordo email list because Steve writes fantastic newsletters. Do you have a newsletter?
Also the Bench Table email list.
Boom, boom, boom.
Get on it.
It's a former career of mine.
That is true. I bet you write a mean newsletter.
Or a nice working one. Working on
it. Yeah. Yeah, I prefer to be nice. I don't like shouting at my people.
Oh, but I didn't mean like that. Come on, guys. Come on, guys. All right. Well, that's our show. You all won trivia.
Ben, you won trivia. Woo! Yay. Woo!
And you won at bringing us snacks, because these are probably my favorite snacks
we won.
On our show ever.
Oh, my God. As soon as we go off air, I'm going to be, like, drinking the oil out of the bottom of these cans, so we might want to cut soon.
Okay.
Well, soften them up with the bread.
Yeah. Thanks, Hannah. Thanks, Dylan. Thanks, Jess.
Thanks,
for the
Kat.
Great trivia.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jess.
Thank you, Ben. Thanks so much for coming on to not once but twice today on HRN. Everyone go listen to Why Food. You probably have a
and
more
And then subscribe at benchtable.com.
Do it. And definitely stay tuned for some more bent to table goodness on cooking issues very soon.
And don't forget to use promo code HRN when you inevitably sign up for your bent to table subscription, because I don't know why you wouldn't. Make sure you use the promo code, because HRN will get some love.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's our show. We have a special episode next week featuring a friend from Four Roses Bourbon. And don't miss that. And then
I should come back.
Yeah.
It was recorded in another time.
You have to go back in time.
Okay. It was a while ago.
It's an alternate timeline.
Dylan and I drank bourbon at 11 a.m.
Good times. All right. So we'll see you next week. And then the week after, make sure you're tuning in to hear us at Charleston. HRN Happy Hour is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.